by. Ladies and gentlemen, good day, and thank you so much for your patience. We'd like to welcome you to today's IBM MS Data Recovery Facility conference call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Diane McCollum. Please go ahead, Diane.
Welcome, everyone, to Does Worrying About How to Recover Your IMS Databases Keep You Up at Night? My name is Diane McCollum, and I am the worldwide sales leader for IBM's DB2 for Z and DB2 and IMS tools. I will be your host today. Our speaker today is Victor K. Kim of IBM, a member of the IMS Tools Recovery Development Team. Joining him later for Q&A will be Alan Hall, also from IBM. So now I'd like to turn it over to Victor. Victor?
Thank you, Diane. Good morning. My name is Victor Lim, and I'm one of the developers for the IMS DRF tool. Today we also have Alan Hall on the line. He is one of the key developers who coordinate most of the changes required to get DRF to perform integrated tools operations with HPIC and HPPC. So I believe for the beginning portion of this session, we'll go straight into the presentation. And as you have questions, make sure you make a note of them. And at the end, between Alan and me, we'll try to work with you with your questions. On page 2 of the slides, you'll see the agenda we have today. We're going to start off with a recap of the objectives of this call. I believe the invitation that was sent to you consisted of about 5 questions, which hopefully we'll help answer by the end of this call. The format we use to help present this material is example-driven. So as you can see, we have 3 examples created for that purpose. First case of the bad reorg utility, an alternative to testing with your production databases, and updating your image copies. At the end, we'll wrap up and point you to where you can find more information about DRF and some of the other tools mentioned in the slides, and then open up for questions. On page 3, we have the 5 objectives of this call. How do you ensure what input data sets are required for your off-site disaster or local recoveries, and are they accessible? How do you issue an IMS command, such as a DBR or start, as part of your batch job? How do you simplify your recovery process by including your data verification, such as a pointer checker, and image copy to process as part of your DRF job? Those first 3 questions I hope to go into more detail and answer in the first example of this presentation. The next 2 questions will have examples of their own, like do you need to build a test or audit copy of your databases without disrupting your production data? And do you need to run incremental image copies to a next logical commit point on the log without disrupting your databases? Moving on to the next slide, slide 4, we have our first example. Case 1, case of the bad reorg tool. Let's just say that your company just received some beta code for a kind of database reorg utility that your shop hopes to one day replace your in-house version or maybe a more expensive tool from a different competitor. However, you just spent the past few days working practically nonstop on some kind of critical situation, and you're tired. So you're going to go home and rest up and worry about testing the new beta code tomorrow. As you're about to leave, you notice that the hair on the back of your neck starts to stand up as you start hearing footsteps running towards you. Someone in your team, in his eagerness to start testing without you, began playing around with the new tool. He installed the tool and had it pointing at your production environment. The tool terminated partway and corrupted several of your databases. Another problem we have here is that the most current image copy that you have or is or a week old, meaning that if you do a recovery, you're going to have to process a lot of log data and log data sets. What do we do here? On slide 5, we'll show you what the DRF batch job can do to help you in this kind of situation. First, we'll show you how to run a verified job to provide you with a list of all the necessary input data sets that are required for recovery, and also to make sure that these data sets are accessible to you. We'll also show you how you can run the IMS DBR command as part of your batch job, automatically delete and redefine your database data sets, and take a new image copy and run a pointer checker job in parallel to your recovery. Once all that is done, once all your recovery process is done, DRF will also issue an IMS start command to make sure that your databases go back online. On slide 6 is the first of two pages that show a sample DRF proc to set up your primary recovery environment. This sample proc will be used in all the examples you'll see here, and I will only show this in these two slides here. The slides after these two pages will show the sample SysIn that you will use to perform a verified job. The one thing that I wanted to point out here is that as part of DRF version 3, we allow the ability to invoke other tools such as HPIC, HPPC, and DDBPC as part of DRF. Some of the things you need in order to use these other tools is, number one, make sure you have them, and number two, include the reslibs to these tools in your stepwise concatenation of your DRF procedures. Slide number 7 is just a continuation of the previous slide, and as you can see, it also identifies some of the new DDs you need in order to invoke HPIC, HPPC, and DDBPC. Slide 8, we are now ready to specify the SysIn statements to invoke a verified job. On the left, you see a screen capture of this SysIn and two add statements. The add statements you see here are used to build a recovery list of what looks like 6 databases. Start command right afterwards initiates the recovery job. And with this statement, you can also specify a recovery time to any point in time that you wish to recover up to. The verify option you see in the red circle on start gives you actually 3 flavors of input verification. The default value list returns a list of required inputs in a report output. Alloc allocates each of the input data sets to verify that they're accessible, and also we have an open option which goes one step further and makes sure that each data set can be opened. This example and other examples in this presentation will use the verify alloc. On slide 9, we have another screen capture which shows the report output after you run the verified job from the previous slide. These next two slides capture 2 pages of that output and identifies the final status of the verify run. I've outlined it 2 areas on this slide with a red circle. The first circle on top identifies what type of DRF run this was for. In this case, it was the verify alloc. Second circle towards the bottom right corner shows shows the overall status of each of the database data sets and identifies that each of the all of the input data sets that apply to that database data set completed verification successfully. Slide 10, we have a section in the DRF reports called the Database Recovery Facility Dataset I.O. Report. And here we list all the input data sets that we will be using for recovery. We have a section for image copies, change accum, and log data set names. And as you can see in the red circles on the right, we've returned a return code status identifying if each of the input data sets verified and allocated successfully in this job. On slide 11, now that we've successfully verified that our inputs are available for recovery, we can proceed with the actual recovery itself. The citizen you see here will cover the remaining points of this example. And number one, we're going to issue an IMS DBR command to bring your databases offline for the recovery. We provide a new DBR CMD option on the start statement. And as part of version 3, we're making use of a common tool service layer, which syncs batch jobs to IMS for the purpose of issuing online IMS commands. DBR is one of them. Start is the other. And number two, this job also shows us automatically deleting and redefining your production data sets. To get that to work, you need to specify a DBDSL statement, as you can see on about line 506 of the citizen. This statement, the DBDSL statement, is followed by a three-digit alphanumeric string, which you can determine. This is so you can define several DBDSL statements for different allocation attributes for different database data sets. the statement we have here specifies that we're going to use DISP new, which tells DRF to delete and redefine the production databases prior to recovery. And you can indicate which DBs will use this DBDSL statement via the DBATRB option on the add statement. And that is on line 515 of the citizen. Points number 3 and 4 shows the new IC and PC options used in DRF. For customers who already use HPIC or HPPC, we try to make integration with DRF more simple and consistent by reusing the same parameters as defined to the individual tools. Point number 5, at the end of recovery, we want to bring the databases back online. And we do that with the STA CMD option on the start statement. Now, after we submit this job and hoping that everything works fine, we should expect the output that is coming up on slide 12. On slide 12, we see the same pretty familiar report output from earlier. However, this time the status is different, and there's another section in here that reports the return codes for each of the individual tools. First circle on the top right, in the middle of the page, identifies the final status for each of the database data sets that we're restoring. And in this case, it says that we successfully deleted and redefined the database. The circles underneath that emphasize that image copies and corner checker jobs also ran successfully. On slide 13, since one thing I wanted to say is that since DRF runs HPIC for the purpose of generating image copies and HPPC, those tools actually generate their own set of report output. And what DRF does is captures that output and returns it as part of its a consolidated report, appending those reports for the individual tools at the end of the DRF reports. So what you see here is only a portion. I didn't want to list the entire reports returned from the editor tools. So this is just a portion of what you will see from coming out of HPIC. And the reason why I wanted to show this particular capture is that it shows the six image copies that we've had DRF generate for us. And it also shows that HPIC also issued a notify IC to DBRC to make sure that these image copies are registered into the recon. Slide number 14 is a capture of a portion of the HPPC output that was also appended at the end of the DRF reports. And this is just to give you an idea that the job that we submitted ran for the six database data sets, and that there were no pointer errors produced. Now, with all that, we should really be done with our recovery. However, there is one more step that I wanted to add. On slide number 15, what I decided to do was run a netter verify ALOC job. Remember that as part of our recovery, we generated new image copies, six new image copies. And, of course, we can always generate a recon listing and look up each of the image copy data sets to see if they're actually there. What I wanted to point out is that you can just simply run the netter verify job to return that output and make sure that it's accurate. As you can see, in this report output, after we ran a verify job, DRF successfully identifies the new six image copies that we generated, and that they're also accessible. They're and can be used for future recoveries. And one other thing you will notice here is that no log data sets are required for future recoveries in this case, as all of the log data is already included in your image copies. So we're on slide 16 now. What did DRF help you accomplish in this example? Well, for one thing, we showed you how to run the verification job to provide you with a list of the required input data sets for recovery. And we also did an allocation of each of the input data sets to make sure they're accessible. We showed you how you can issue some of the IMS online commands through a DRF batch job. This is once again done through a common tool service layer, which syncs up the batch, syncs your batch jobs up with the online IMS environment for the purpose of being able to issue slash DBR or slash start command. And we allocate and delete and redefine your database data sets as part of your recovery step. And we also ran HPIC and HPPC as part of, in parallel to your recovery process. Moving on slide number 17, we have the second example, alternative to testing with your production database. As you probably learned from the first example, your team learned the hard way that maybe it wasn't a good idea to run your beta code on the production system. Now that you've had, now that you put that fire out and had some time to rest, it's time to get back to work. So what we need to do now is find out what we, how to test this new code that we have. So we know two things. It's definitely not a good idea to test your tool against the production databases. And after last night's downtime, you want to avoid disrupting your databases as much as possible. So what do we do here? Slide number 18. We'll show you how we could use DRF to help you create duplicate copies of your database data sets. And we'll do that using only your image copies, change accumes if you have them, and log inputs. This is also this function is also referred to as recover to copy, and as you could probably see in other documentations or presentations. And as part of this example, we'll also show you how to identify these new duplicate databases in our DRF reports. Okay, moving on to slide 19. We have another screen capture of the citizen that you can use to submit this recovered copy job. One of the first things you need to do or specify for your citizen is the output dupe statement, which will identify to DRF that he is to perform a recovered copy operation. If you do not specify this statement, DRF will take the default value, which is output pro, output to production database. Number two, you need to specify a form of a DBDSN statement to help set up the different naming conventions that you wish to use for your output data sets. Now, you can, for the DBDSN statements, in this example, I've specified three of them. There's a DBDSN 101. And what this one does is insert test as the high-level qualifier for your database copy data set. And for DBDSN 103, it will insert audit as your high-level qualifier for your copy data sets. And in addition, you will also insert the current date as the fourth level qualifier for your data set names. For next, you'll need to specify some DBDSL statements, which will help identify the different allocation methods you'll be using for your new data sets. This new is something that we saw earlier in the first example. And what it identifies to DRF in this case is that DRF is to allocate the new data sets and generate it by itself. This old, as if you specify this old, it identifies to DRF that DRF is not to allocate and define a data set by himself. He is supposed to use a pre-allocated and generated name that the user provides. And the user can provide the name by means of the DBDSN statement. And I provided an example of that on line 509, DBDSN 102. And the data set name for this for this case will be test hotel DBA.v2. And in order to pick which combination of the DBDSN and DBDSL statements you'll be using, we provided that DB attribute option on the add command. Moving on to the next slide, on slide 20, we have the recover to output report, recover to copy output, and the report looks similar to the other ones we saw prior. The only difference is the indication that this is a recover to copy, and that the names of the new database copies are returned in the database recovery facility recover to copy report, which is down towards the bottom middle of the screen capture. And as you can see, we generated two new database copies using test as the high-level qualifier. If we look a little bit more to the right of that red circle, we'll see that we wrote out 3,015 records to the database copies. And we also see which volumes that we allocated these data sets to. Okay, slide number 21. What did DRF help us accomplish in this example? Well, we showed you that DRF version 3 can perform a recover to copy option. And we created copies of your database data sets using the image copy and logs. And you can use these copies for various reasons, various purposes at your shop. You could use them to generate a test bed, or you could maybe at the end of the year or end of each quarter, maybe you have the requirement of generating databases for audit purposes. And as part of this example, we also showed that we can use naming convention rules to help you generate data set names, or you can predefine them yourselves and just include those names in the DBDSN statements to tell DRF what to look for. Moving on to slide 22, we have the final example that we have for this presentation, and that is to update your image copies. One of the things that you've noticed is that you may not take frequent image copies or as frequent as you would like them to be. Recoveries tend to take much longer due to the amount of log data that you apply. And maybe keeping all the log data sets around and having to ensure that you send all of them to other sites can be pretty troublesome. So what can DRF help you do in this case? In this example, we'll show you that you could bring your image copies up to a more current time and show you that we can generate an incremental, what we call an incremental image copy, using your previous image copy and log data. On slide 24, we have a sample of that CISN that you would submit for this kind of job. And first thing you need to include in your CISN, or one of the things you need to include in this CISN, is the output ICR statement, which identifies the DRF that you will be performing incremental image copy. When you specify this, DRF will not attempt to access any of your production databases or write to any database data set. His job here is to only create an image copy. And we are using the same, since we are using already using HPIC in the DRF interface, we had decided to use we use that code to help us generate the incremental image copy. As you can see in the at the number 2 arrow on the CISN. We're using the same IC option and parameters that are available to us that HPIC provided. And the actual data, when we performed this operation, the actual database data sets were not touched. So on slide 25, we have a little capture of the output that was returned to us from HPIC. The same output that you probably saw in the first example. And from here, I just wanted to show you that two new image copies were generated. We had it generated with a new high-level qualifier for each of them using ICR01. And these two image copies are registered into the recon. And on slide 26, we thought that maybe it was a good idea to run verify job again to make sure that everything's in order. In this case, it was a good thing that we ran that verify job because we found some problems here. As you can see in the circles, the verify job failed and produced the return code 4. However, it did show us towards the left bottom left corner that the new image copies are successfully being picked up by DRF. But what we found out later is that in our environment, someone had gone in and deleted these image copies from the system, which caused the verify alloc failure. So on slide 27, what did DRF help us accomplish here? Well, we created an incremental image copy, which is a more up-to-date or more current image copy from your previous one, which we used as input image copy changing human log data sets. No production databases are accessed in this kind of operation, which means if you want to generate an incremental image copy, you do not have to bring your databases offline. And these image copies are registered to DBRC. Now, we just completed the last of our examples. On slide 28, we were pointing out some of the resources that you could go to for more information. What we just went over was Database Recovery Facility version 3, which GA'd about 2 weeks ago. And if you would like more information about DRF, you could refer to that link on this page that will point you to our most current documentation or most current user's guide for this product. And on this slide, we also point out some additional information and links to some of the other tools that we use in DRF, like HPIC and HPPC. You can also, for more information, contact your local IBM sales rep and visit us in some of the various IMS technical conferences worldwide. And if you need to get a hold of us for any questions or concerns or maybe have some feedback, you could contact us or Diane. Diane's email address is on slide 29, and you can also find mine on the first slide of this presentation. And with all that said and done, I think we could open up this session for questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. For those of you joining us on speakerphones, please remember to turn off your mute function before signaling for a question. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment. Our first question comes from Gary Romanowski with Nationwide Insurance.
Victor?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm. My question concerns the incremental image copy.
Mm-hmm.
Does the utility provide an equivalent CA time parameter similar to what Change Accume does, where you can limit the log data implemented to prevent an open log from being pulled in a nab end or something similar to that? How do you cut off the logs being pulled in?
We currently actually have APAR open for something like that. We're not we didn't plan to provide something like a CA time, but I believe the code that we're trying to implement will determine the necessary logs that will be applied to this incremental image copy.
Yeah, because some of our shops are up almost 24/7 with the online. So if you do something like that, you're going to get an open log being pulled in.
Mm.
Mr. Romanowski, any additional questions?
No, that'll do it. Thanks.
Actually,
it's a good. I really like this provision here. It's really nice.
What was your name again?
Rominski, R-O-M-I-N-S-K-I.
I know we are doing something to enhance incremental image copies in the situation that you described. I could try to get more information for you if you like.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from IBM's Bill Crowshore.
Yes, I have this version of code on one of my accounts currently, and I'm attempting to use the incremental image copy functionality. It appears, based on the function that's provided with the new software, that you're not able to stack. Is this correct?
Stacking image copies?
Correct. It doesn't appear with the incremental image copy function that you can stack output to, a tape.
Yes, that's correct. We didn't provide the stack option with generating these image copies.
Okay. From a recoverability perspective relative to disaster recovery, utilization of incremental image copy wouldn't be feasible then. Obviously, because in order to get copies off-site, you need to write out to tape, and if you're not stacking, if you've got hundreds and hundreds of databases, that would facilitate the need for hundreds and hundreds of tapes, which is not something that is very feasible or something that the customer is going to want to entertain because of the cost related to tapes. So in that regard, are there plans to add the stacking capability? And secondly, with this incremental image copy function, why wasn't it not included with the high-performance image copy as opposed to the database recovery facility?
Alan, do you know, do you have any ideas for this question?
The first part of the question about do we plan to entertain stacking image copies, I looked at some of that conversation yesterday between our manager and a customer, and so, yeah, we are entertaining that idea for the very reason that you mentioned, Bill.
Yeah, I am that customer.
Oh, you are, okay. And the second part of the question, what was the second part? I'm sorry.
The second question was...
Why didn't we provide it as part of HPIC itself?
Part of high-performance image copy.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know why we didn't provide the incremental image copy with that product.
I mean, database recovery facility, as the name states, is a recovery mechanism. Incremental image copy is not recovery. Incremental image copy is backup. So it seems odd that it would be placed in this software product.
I'm sorry, I don't know why that decision was made.
I just know that there were several requirements opened up against DRF to provide this function.
Right. I opened up one of the requirements last week. Like I said, I have the software in-house, and I'm currently using a IVP product that provides this functionality with the stacking capability. And without the stacking capability of incremental image copy, I can't use this functionality with the IBM software for my off-site disaster recovery needs. I use incremental image copy with a particular account to force batch image copy creation. In other words, incremental image copy will be able to create numerous different types of image copy output, fuzzy image copies, batch image copies, all depending on, the input that it's taking in. Now, with the current process that I have in place on a particular customer, I'm forcing the incremental image copy to create only a batch output because the batch output is only usable in a recovery situation in this particular instance. I want to do the same thing with the IBM software, but without the stacking capability, it's almost a moot point to even consider using it.
I'm just writing down what you were saying.
What is your name so we can get back in touch with you again, please?
This is Bill Crowshore.
Yeah, I think I saw some of the emails that went back and forth about this.
Yeah, I've been in contact with KT.
K-Chen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And management is already involved in the decision-making of this. So I think probably in the next few days we'll see something come out of all these discussions.
Okay, yeah, I'm still awaiting, some responses to those questions, and I'd be interested in what the direction will be taken.
This is something that that really sounds like something we would like to implement, but that's really up to the management at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next up from Sun Life Financial, we have Tony Neoclaus.
Well, I have a few questions, but hopefully they're short. The first question was regarding to the pointer checker that runs as part of the recovery. Is that a hash pointer checker, or is that a full pointer checker, or is that an option to determine?
The hash pointer checking only.
Okay. My second question is regarding the image copy names. Is there more control as to what you call your image copies? Can you explicitly fully qualify what the names should be as opposed to providing a prefix or?
Yes, you have all the options on the image copy output that you would have with the regular standalone HP image copy,
okay.
Where you can use a data set naming convention, or you can specify it all the way through the full qualification.
And there is an option to provide to generate dual image copies?
That I, yes, there is, dual image copy output, yeah. That they have the same DSN1 equal and DSN2 equal keywords available.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
My other quick question is the incremental image copy integrated with pointer checker? In other words, can you run pointer checker as part of an incremental image copy?
I think it might be a two-step process, right, Victor, after we create the image copy output.
I'm trying to remember. I think it goes through, I actually think it goes through the same logic when it generates the image copy blocks to send to HPIC. They'll also send it to HP PC if you specify that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I believe you're correct.
Yeah. Does all this functionality work the same way with HALDB? Is there any restrictions there? I guess some things might not necessarily be similar in a way that you specify data sets and all that, where HALDBs are, all that stuff is already pre-enter in the VRC.
Yes, we're able to take image copies and do pointer checker, that is hash pointer checking of HALDB databases. And here, yes.
And you can do copies of HALDBs?
I think we are able to. Anything that HPIC can do with HALDB, then DRF is able to do through the integrated interface.
Right, but the function of creating a copy database, I guess, is not an image copy function. It's more of a DRF function, isn't it?
Yeah, if you specify a naming convention rule for your output data set, we'll be able to generate a copy of your HALDBs.
Okay. And at some point I heard some integration with the ability to rebuild indexes, either straight secondary indexes or HALDB indexes. Is that, I didn't see that in this presentation, but I don't know if it was omitted for time.
Yeah, we didn't provide a sample for that piece because it's still being worked on and developed.
I see.
So yeah. That we expect something to come out for that in the APAR stream.
Thank you. That was all.
And next up we have Tony Impolitari with AT&T.
Good morning, Victor.
Good morning.
Great presentation. Thank you. I have comments that go back to testing that we did with this product in the mid-August timeframe of 2004. Now, I realize that's quite some time ago by this time, but and I'm sure the product has probably been improved to address these issues, but I just wanted to try and get an update on them if I could. What we found out at that time was that on a thumbnail, that DRF could not handle a point-in-time recovery with a change of QM input, but I've got some tempered comments to put on that. There appeared to be two problems that we discovered. Number one was that if a change of QM data set has any uncommitted updates on it, such as a unit of work that got split across two IMS logs, one of which did not get change accumulated, the change of QM data set that contains those uncommitted updates would not be selected for use in a PITR. The second problem was that if a change of QM has only committed updates, but the PITR is to a timestamp that is in the middle of an allocation time frame for a database, that change accumulated data set also would not be selected for use in the PITR. Now, basically, while you think about that for a moment, the DRF product had great promise for us because it looked as though you could instruct it to say, please declare any timestamp that we would like for recovery, but it's one thing to do that, and quite another thing for that timestamp to be quote-unquote right with DBRC. So those were the problems that we uncovered in our testing in 2004, and I'd like to know if there's been any movement toward getting PITR recoveries evolved to the point where we can use change accumulation data sets to get right back to the timestamp that we select for recovery, which is critical for our application because we run online a great deal of the day with online and batch overlapping in BMP mode, so it's quite a busy environment. And if you could comment on that, that would be terrific. No, that's quite a mouthful. So if I could perhaps call you off the air or send you in email a more expanded version of what I just talked about, that would be fine also.
Oh, that would be great. But
he can send it to me because you have my email address, and then I'll forward it on. This is Diane.
Okay. Thank
but,
you.
I am familiar with this kind of scenario, and I think all I could say on the air is that something is being looked at.
Okay.
I can't say when something will be available, but there are people looking into this right now.
Very well. Thank you.
With one follow-up question remaining in our queue, once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our follow-up comes from Gary Romanowski.
And the gentleman that raised the issue of incremental image copy and stacking, what we've been doing since probably the end of last month, we're transitioning off of all 24-track tapes. We used to do off-site copies, copy to a tape, stacked. But now what we do, we run everything to virtual image copy, or I'm sorry, virtual tape, and then cut a large tape off of that and send the large tape off site. We get a lot better performance that way than with the smaller tape cartridges.
Okay.
Okay.
Moving on to Greg Lang with AT&T.
So actually, it's Joe Schweitzer at AT&T. I'm in Greg's office here. With this product, he uses data spaces, and if we use too much, he'll ebb end. Has there been any work on how do we get recovery to work if we're limited to how much data space the product will use?
Hi, Joe. Have you been in communication with Dave Moore and Bob Maggett?
No.
No? Mark Spooner?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they're writing up a design brief over high-level view design, and I think they were expecting to send you that via email.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
We have no further questions in our queue at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to our panel for additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for taking time out of your busy schedules to attend. Just worrying about how to recover your IMS databases to keep you awake at night. A special thanks goes out to Victor Kim and Alan Hall, both from IBM. Victor for being our speaker today, and Victor and Alan for creating this presentation and being available for your questions. If you should have any additional questions, please do not hesitate to contact me, and I will be glad to put you in touch with an IMS Tools sales or technical specialist, or either Victor or Alan. Thank you for attending. Goodbye, and have a great day.
That does conclude today's conference call. Thank you again for your participation.